me introduce two people as we go into this next interview. The first one is Dr. Mike Chupp. Mike is my executive vice president of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. I've known Mike clear back to the time he was a student and came to Tenwick in the late 80s. In fact, I encouraged him to come back and consider God's call in his life as a missionary. And God did that, and he spent over 20 years there as a surgeon and also their medical superintendent. I've asked Mike to actually do this interview with Stan Hagert. Stan is a physician, former missionary himself in Gambia, West Africa, was very isolated, experienced burnout, and went through recovery and returned to the mission field. And from that, got a real passion to help others to learn to care for themselves while serving others. And has been very involved in that ministry now that he's back and based in the States. Mike's going to be interviewing him on this important topic of burnout prevention.
Dr. Stan Hagert, thanks for joining us today on Christian Doctors Digest. Happy to have you with us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I think the impetus for this interview today, I had the opportunity to hear you share with a large group of surgeons with the Pan-African Academy of Christian Surgeons last November, and you gave a talk to all of us entitled, Open a Space and Pour in Grace, How You Can Be a Source of Renewal for Missionary Physicians. Can you tell us just a little bit about how you became involved in missionary member care?
Well, I was a missionary in West Africa for about a 13-year period, 10 years actually on the field. And about the end of my second term, something was definitely wrong. I began to be cynical. I was exhausted. I no longer had joy. I began to distance myself from others there, both nationals and missionaries. I lost interest in doing things I used to enjoy. And, you know, at first I just attributed this to regular missionary stress. But over time, I just began withdrawing more and more and really found myself in a very dark place. And this was back in the early 2000s, actually, and people weren't talking much about burnout then. And so I had no label to put on this, but I began to learn that I was really suffering from burnout, and it wasn't a very unusual experience. So it happens to lots of people. So in the course of recovering from that, I learned a lot and became very passionate about wanting to help others avoid stepping in some of the holes I had stepped into. So that began my journey toward understanding this and being interested in member care.
Since then, it seems like the medical literature is just a wide proliferation of articles. It seems like I pick up a journal every week and there's something about burnout here in the U.S.
That's for sure. The numbers are really quite frightening. I think I've read that more than 50% of U.S. physicians are reporting at least some symptoms of burnout, which is really amazing. It's really taking its toll.
Today, I'd like for our listeners to hear from you a little bit about you were a missionary doctor and you had your own personal experience with burnout. You've also, I know, practiced up in the state of Michigan. You and I have a lot in common. I was also in Africa for a number of years and had the opportunity, the blessing of taking care of patients also in the state of Michigan. And I know that burnout is not just a cross-cultural problem. It's also a big problem, as we've alluded to, here in the United States. So would you talk a little bit about this whole entity of burnout? What is it? And then what it looks like? How does it differ in the United States in healthcare versus some of our missionary colleagues overseas?
Well, first of all, burnout is something that happens to people that deal with people. It doesn't often happen to people that work with inanimate objects, but those who are face-to-face with people, perhaps in crisis or difficulty, day-to-day, day-in, day-out, they tend to burn out. So it affects pastors, it affects healthcare workers, policemen, firemen. You know, anyone that's involved with people can experience this. And people smarter than I have put this together really in three components that comprise the burnout syndrome, and they spell the word RED, but I'll present them as ERD. ERD is not anywhere near as memorable as RED, but anyway, it makes more logical sense to me.
Sure, sure.
The E stands for exhaustion, and exhaustion is primarily emotional with burnout, but As you know, we're whole beings, and so emotions, our physical bodies, our spirits, our minds, all can be just drained to the dregs, basically, by giving out and giving out without attention to replacement. So the E stands for an exhaustion that's pervasive, and a simple vacation or a little time off just does not restore you. So that's the E for the burnout syndrome. And then the R stands for a reduced sense of personal accomplishment or personal adequacy. You know, you're going along, and from everyone else's perspective, you're having the same kind of work output, but inside, internally, you feel like you're just spinning your wheels. And if anyone really knew what was going on inside, you think they would expose me as an imposter. In fact, this can get to the point of something called the imposter syndrome, which for me in West Africa kind of looked like this. You know, I had degrees behind my name. I had prefixes in front of my name. I seemingly had all the qualifications I needed for that job. I thought I was ready to go. But as I was burning out, I started to say things to myself like this. You know what? They must have really been hard up when they let me into medical school. And on the day when I applied to the mission board, you know, they felt sorry for me probably, and they just let me through because they were hard up for missionaries. And, you know, anyone, any day now, someone's going to show up here and expose me as an imposter. You know, I'm really not cut out for this job. And really what that is the sign of a depleted soul. You begin really to have a lot of self-doubt. And the D stands for depersonalization. You know, sometimes early in the burnout process, we set up healthy distance, healthy boundaries to try to protect ourselves and our resources and maybe draw in a little bit from contact with others. But as burnout progresses, that distancing turns into a sense of blaming others for your own discomfort and really holding people at arm's length. I began to view people as the enemy, really. And if I could only get away from them, I would be all right. You know, I'd be a wonderful missionary if it wasn't for all these nationals. That's how I began to think. And so that's really irrational. But as you become more and more depleted, you kind of withdraw in boundaries that are no longer healthy. And you even keep away people that could be restoring for you.
I've heard people talk about the dark side of altruism, the dark side of who we are as healthcare professionals, and that it's I think you have a term that you use for that, something about mutation that you used in November. Tell us about these mutations, this dark side of who we are as healthcare professionals.
Well, we all come into our vocations with sets of values that we really have grown up with. For the Christian physician, that's especially true because we come in, I think, to the profession with the idea of not only treating physical need, but building the kingdom. You know, we want to see people come to Christ and realize their need for Him. We want to exemplify Christ's love and compassion for others. We value service. You know, we want to uplift the needs of the poor and the marginalized and the suffering. And so we come in with these values really inherent in who we are. And as we come into the medical world, we also undergo a socialization process into a medical culture. Sometimes we don't realize that this is happening, but that culture also has values. Altruism, which you already mentioned, is we're expected to put patients' interests first and to be self-sacrificing. We have a strong sense of duty, a commitment to service to others. Long hours, you know, they sort of go with the territory, and we feel that we should really devote ourselves to them. Excellence is also very important. We want to exceed the expectations that are on us, and we want to have a commitment to lifelong learning, for example, and a sense of honor and integrity. But what can happen as we find ourselves in a setting of unlimited need and great pressures, whether it's overseas or whether here in the U.S., these values can undergo mutations. You know, they become a part of our DNA, but that DNA can mutate. And this idea of excellence can mutate into perfection. In other words, we begin to feel that we can never make a mistake. And so we can put on a false cloak of competence, believing that mistakes are unacceptable. And if a mistake is made and if someone is harmed, then surely someone is to blame. I remember lecturers back in medical school saying things like, if you don't pay attention to what I'm telling you right now and learn this, someday, somewhere, you're going to kill somebody.
Hmm.
I don't know if you ever experienced that or not, but I remember that. And so, you know, we are expected to be perfect. And really, perfection is an unattainable value. But some of us respond to that tension by feigning omniscience. We pretend that we know everything. And I think we've all known healthcare professionals who masked their own fear and uncertainty with swagger and bluster. So that's one example of a good value that can go wrong and set us up for trouble.
And I think there's a degree of somehow feeling invincible. Is there not? I came across a quote the other day by Alessandra Pigney, who I guess is a licensed psychologist. She was with Doctors Without Borders. And this quote, "We make exhaustion, burnout, busyness, and grit into status symbols. We measure how cool we are by how much we can endure." What do you think about that quote?
Oh, that's a great quote. And that comes right into the next thing that we tend to fake, and that is omnipotence. You know, we begin to believe that, you know, our sense of duty can sort of morph into complete denial of physical, mental, or emotional limitations. You know, the old joke on my surgery rotation was, what's the problem with being on call every other night?
Right. You miss out on half the cases.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, subtly, as we are trained, these values are built into us that we don't have limits. And we begin to fake qualities that really only God truly possesses, like omnipotence. But then also, with that invincibility, there's a sense in which we are to be emotionally invincible as well. You know, we're not really trained, at least we weren't back when I was in residency in medical school, to really learn how to grieve well. When someone dies, you know, we pretty much have to keep the game face on and go on to see the next patient. And so we can learn to wear this cloak of silence because others around us are not trained on healthy expressions of emotion. And so we believe that no one else is feeling what we are inside. And so that can be also a great source of strain.
Stan, in November, you shared with all of us surgeons a very important concept about grace and a tool. You call it the cycle of grace. Can you tell our listeners about this cycle of grace?
This was actually developed by a physician, a man named Frank Lake, back in 1966, a psychiatrist, actually, who's British. And he was noticing missionaries going to India and coming back after a short time, you know, cynical, exhausted, burned out. So he got together with a theologian, Emil Brunner, and together they tried to figure out why this was happening and also why this doesn't seem to be reflected in the life of Jesus. And so they came up with this fascinating thing that they termed the dynamic cycle and has recently been revived in popularity by Trevor Hudson and Jerry P. Haas in their book called The Cycle of Grace, Living in Sacred Balance. So that's where this is from. But if you'll imagine a clock face with me for a minute, and up at the 12 o'clock position, put the word acceptance or identity. Think about the baptism of Jesus in the first chapter of Mark. Do you remember when he came up out of the baptismal waters? A voice came from heaven and said this, "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased." And you know, when you think about it, what words do we more long to hear from our Father than, mm-hmm. "I love you and I am pleased with you"?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it impresses me that this was said by God the Father to God the Son before he had even done one thing in regard to ministry. He had not met any needs. He had not healed any diseases. He had not said any words. He had not preached the gospel yet. And yet his Father said, "I love you and I am pleased with you." And I think that that is so important for us to enter ministry, no matter what it is, knowing that our acceptance is based on our identity in Jesus Christ. It's not based on anything that we do. God loves us and he won't stop based on anything that we do or don't do.
So what's at 3 o'clock?
Okay, 3 o'clock then is something called sustenance. And if you notice in the life of Jesus that he had all kinds of activities then that stemmed from his identity by which he sustained himself. He had solitude and prayer. He regularly dismissed needs around him. He dismissed crowds, said no to needs so that he could be alone with his Father and re-energize and reconnect. And not only that, he had a rich relational life. He had disciples, of course, that he worked with closely. But then he had friends. He had people like Mary, Martha, and Lazarus that he just loved to get together with. And Jesus was often accused of being at parties a lot, you know, a lot of social gatherings, a lot of time being with people. And then, of course, there was Sabbath, which as a as a Jew, he would have practiced and taken time away from a busy schedule to do no work, but to pay attention to restoration. He also slept, even in boats that were being tossed on the waves. He ate when he was hungry. We just really notice a rhythm of work and rest in his life that stems from the fact that his worth and identity were not based on what he was accomplishing. They were flowing from who he was, loved son of his father. So then down to the 6 o'clock position, put the word significance. And that word comes from the word sign. And Jesus' life was a sign. And he said many things about himself and who he was. He said, "Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father." He said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life, and I am the door, the bread of life, the good shepherd." And he said that his purpose was to seek and to save that which was lost. So out of that time with his Father, out of that identity of who he was, then flowed this sense that this is my song to sing in the world. You know, God sends each of us into the world with a song to sing, and Jesus knew what his was. So I think that ministry then is not only about what we do, it's mm-hmm. more about who we are. And actually who we are is going to be remembered a whole lot more than what we actually do.
Yes.
So then over at the 9 o'clock position comes this idea of achievement or ministry. Lake's word was achievement. Trevor Howard has actually replaced this with the words fruitfulness in obedient ministry, mm-hmm. which I really like. Mm-hmm. Because rooted firmly in his acceptance by the Father, and then nourished and directed by his sustaining activities, and assured of his unique significance, Jesus' life flowed then in fruitfulness, in obedient ministry. And, you know, that is just a very, very important thing. I'm really impressed by Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. You know, we all can quote 8 and 9, but verse 10 says, "For we are God's workmanship, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God has prepared for us to do ahead of time." Hmm. That's a rough paraphrase. I don't have my scripture open in front of me.
I think it was pretty good.
Okay, thank you. But, for example, if I were to hand you some eggs, Mike, and you put your hands together in a cup, and I started piling eggs in there, you know, we'd probably get maybe 8 or 10 eggs in your hands, and then they'd start hitting the floor, and then we'd have omelets before long. Mm-hmm. But if I got LeBron James over and started handing eggs to him, I bet I could get a couple dozen in his hands, but they would still start hitting the floor after a while. Mm-hmm. So that's to say that God made each of us differently with different capacities. But not only did he prepare us exactly the way he wanted us to be, he also prepared the works exactly suited for us. And so, you know, if I am overloading my life and piling on too many ministries and the eggs are hitting the floor, I could berate myself and say, "Oh, you worthless failure." Or I could ask myself, "Have I really been putting too many eggs in the hands that were created for fewer eggs?" And so I just really love the idea that God created the works for us and us for the works, and that our achievements flow out of our identity in him, our sustenance, and our significance, which he has tailored just for us.
That's very powerful, Stan. I was medical director for a number of years in Kenya, a large mission hospital called Tenwick, and I would notice that a number of all my medical staff, both national and missionary, they all had different capacities, and I had to pay especially close attention to those who seemed to have a lower capacity for different stresses, loads. And you've put it so well that, you know, LeBron James' hand versus mine, and a different capacity there. And so it's sort of those of us who are leaders, who are responsible, whether it's in the United States healthcare system, responsible for other physicians, other healthcare professionals, PAs, nurses, it behooves us to know well those who work with and for us so we take good care of them. Would you agree?
Absolutely. That's so very important, and to recognize our differing capacities and also to be monitoring for signs of burnout. If you permit, I would just like to mention that burnout, I think, happens when we try to go the wrong way around this cycle of grace. In fact, as I was teaching about burnout after my recovery, I used to talk about, you know, things that I could do differently to change my lifestyle, to spend more time paying attention to my own needs. And in one of these seminars that I taught, someone asked me, "So Stan, what was happening to you spiritually when you were burning out?" And at first I said, "Well, I think I was fine. You know, I was having my quiet time. I was preaching. I was ministering. I was, you know, keeping up the output. Basically, my answer was I was keeping up my spiritual achievements. But as I reflected more and more about what was happening, what I now realize is that really I was running the wrong way around this cycle of grace, that even though I would have denied it, I was basing my identity on how much I could achieve. In other words, if I could just keep this ministry going, God would notice how dedicated I am to Him. And subtly, I was believing that, you know, maybe He will love me more, or maybe I can sustain His love for me, because I was rooting my significance in my achievements, and then trying to draw sustenance from my significance, and then using that then to secure my identity. You know, at any point in this cycle of grace, we have a decision to make about which direction we're going to draw from. So if I'm down there at significance, if I'm not drawing it from sustenance and identity, I'm going to start to draw it from achievement. And then if I'm around at sustenance, trying to get that from my significance, what happened was I was plopped into a setting of unlimited need, and my ability to keep achieving was on the ropes. You know, I could not keep achieving. Mm. And what was most threatening about that was that I began to fear deep down inside that I would no longer be significant, and because of that, I would no longer be loved. And that's a dangerous place to be.
Dr. Stan, it seems like in the last year or so, there has been a little bit of a shift in emphasis in the healthcare literature away from what you as an individual do in terms of helping your build your resilience and prevent burnout to looking at the bigger system issues, organizations, and care for their workers. So what have you seen, and what would be your comments about that shift in emphasis?
I'm very happy to see it, because it's important to realize that burnout doesn't happen in a vacuum. And some of the early literature, I think, focused more on our efficiency of practice. In other words, even though that's very important, if we can simply improve our use of electronic medical records or help our office staff to get more training, then we may be able to, you know, reduce the sense of chaos or the sense of loss of control that many physicians feel. And though that's an important area, it's one of only what I'd like to identify as three important components to physician well-being. And others actually have put this together in a paradigm, but I'll describe it to you. Imagine a pie in front of you, and it's cut into three equal pieces. The piece on the right side, shall we say, would be efficiency of practice, and maybe the piece at the base of the pie would be physician resilience. And over on the left side, we could call it corporate culture or organizational culture and values. And the emphasis on physician resilience is certainly important, but we can't neglect the fact that all organizations have a set of values that drive them and drive their decisions. In fact, you're aware that we put canaries down into coal mines, and we do that for a reason. Canaries have a weaker constitution, and they tend to die when the environment just begins to get toxic with gases or something like that. And so they're there for a reason, and when they die, you need to address the toxic environment. But sometimes the literature on physician resilience seems to suggest that really what we just need are tougher canaries. You know, we need to build stronger physicians that can weather more difficult things, when in reality, we also need to look at the toxicity of the environment and see whether there are values that are driving this to view physicians more as tools that simply need to be used until they wear out and need replacing. But I think a healthier approach is to view our people as our most important resource. Without our people, we don't have an operation, and we need to view them as targets of our ministry, if you will, as well as those who are engaged in the ministry. So investing in their well-being is just very important. And sometimes physicians, as they become healthy, as they learn resilient habits, they can have a powerful influence back on the organization to advocate for a more sane environment and a healthier environment.
And I'm delighted to see, Stan, I'm sure you are also, to see popping up all over the country physician wellness centers and certainly mission organizations taking this very seriously over the last few years, member care, and making sure that missionaries are whole and taken care of to prevent this burnout, which leads to a significant loss of folks serving on the field.
Absolutely. And even if people on the field are not burning out completely, there's a whole lot of brownout out there. If you understand it,
yes.
You know, that's and a lot of stages of wellness that really could be improved. I actually put a 4-stage tool on our website that looks at shalom and doing okay and survival and then burnout. So often when we ask, how are you doing? The answer can be, oh, I'm surviving. But really, I think that it's okay to strive for shalom and to bring those things into our lives that'll help us serve with enduring joy instead of slogging through.
Well, let's just wrap up this interview with a little discussion about resources. Your talk in November was, you know, how to bring help to others that we notice are displaying symptomatology of burnout, either early or late. At CMDA, we have Life and Leadership Coaching Ministry led by Dr. Steve Sartori. And one aspect is coaching physicians and dentists through periods of time which are difficult and helping them to figure out ways to deal with the ERD that you described earlier. And folks can go to the CMDA website and look up our coaching ministry and how to get in contact with those good folks. But talk to us about other resources. You've been involved in this member care for a number of years, so you must know some great resources for our constituents to go to.
Sure. And I would just like to mention my wife and I have started an organization called Serving with Joy. And we have a website, servingwithjoy.org, all small case. If you go to .com, you get a different organization. But on that website, we have links to many of the resources that you mentioned and can be helpful. I would just like to highlight one. For the past 2 years, we have held a retreat for cross-cultural healthcare workers, for missionary physicians and nurses and others at Alongside Incorporated, an organization just near Kalamazoo, Michigan. This is a great organization. We spend 9 days unpacking what we've just said in a few minutes here and especially applying it to the mission setting. So I would invite anyone who is interested in being part of that to please, you can get a hold of that link through our website as well, but it's alongsidecares.net. And also on our website, we have links to other organizations that are very helpful, not only for medical missionaries, but also for physicians in the U.S.
Dr. Stan Haggart, it has been a delight to host you today on Christian Doctor's Digest. I pray for you the best as you interact with not only our members here in the United States doing healthcare, but also with our missionary members overseas, that God's kingdom can be expanded with healthy workers in the harvest.
That's my goal and my aim, and I want to thank you for inviting me to be with you today.
Let me remind you of Stan and Deb's website, servingwithjoy.org. Now, this is a big issue, and I got toasty when I was a missionary, almost burnt out, and I had to reset my life. I've got a great resource that if you need to reset yours prophylactically or because you're getting toasty, it's called Reset, Living a Grace-Packed Life in a Burnout Culture. It's by David Murray. It's available at cmda.org in our bookstore, or go to 888-230-2637. Call us at that number, and we can get that to you right away. CMDA is focusing more and more on this issue. Steve Sartori and his team are really doing this through a new endeavor called the Center for Well-Being, because this issue is so pervasive and so common. Today, over 50% of healthcare professionals are dealing with burnout. And so I know many of you are as well. We'll be praying for you, and we stand here to help.